Everyone ready?
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I think we'll get started here. We're about 2 minutes early, but looks like everybody's here. So I'd like to start by welcoming everybody to the November 21st, 2019 regular meeting of the Marysville Board of Education. I'd like to call it to order. And then before we get started, I did just want to say on behalf of Marysville Schools that we wanted to extend our deepest sympathies to Ben Logan. They are dealing with the loss of a teacher last week and two of their students just yesterday. So our thoughts and prayers are with them. And then with that, we have the roll call, please.
Mr. Luke?
Here.
Ms. Savage?
Here.
Ms. Powers?
Here.
Mr. Smith?
Here.
Ms. Devine?
Here. And now, if you will stand and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance, flag is right back there. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America.
And to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. And thank you, Mrs. Lewis, for hosting us. And as always, the treats, we appreciate them greatly.
Who's responsible for that?
Mrs. Leonard is responsible for those treats, so, yeah.
If it were me, you'd have, like, Oreos on. Which is still good.
Yeah. All right. First up on our agenda, I would accept a motion to approve our agenda for this meeting.
So moved.
Motion by Ms. Powers.
Second.
Second by Mr. Smith. Roll call.
Ms. Powers.
Yes.
Mr. Smith.
Yes.
Mr. Luke.
Yes.
Ms. Savage.
Yes.
Ms. Devine.
Yes. Motion carries. Next up, we have the Employee of the Month. Would you like to?
Anything first?
What's that? Oh, yeah, I guess I will accept a motion first to recommend to approve Pam Porter as the Classified Employee of the Month. Sorry. Motion, please.
So
moved. Motion by Mr. Smith.
Second.
Second by Mrs. Powers. And now, if you wouldn't mind telling us a little bit about Mrs.
Pam,
Porter.
Pam, come on down.
I always make everyone stand here and embarrassed. So it's my pleasure to recognize you as Employee of the Month, and I have the opportunity to read what your peers wrote about you in order to get this award. Okay?
Okay.
So first of all, not only is she awesome, but she's a key part of Special Education Department, but really a key part of the board office. So I'd be remiss if I didn't mention that before I say that. We really value you. There are no words to describe how valuable Pam is. She supports staff throughout the district. She handles district-wide parent concerns, building and fiscal needs, as well as keeping administrators on track, which might be difficult sometimes. Pam follows up with new programs, tracks students, and knows which students are where. She is the glue to our department and just an amazing person. So congratulations.
Thank you.
Congratulations. Thank you. And you're lucky that it's still on there. Because we also thank you, Pam. We really appreciate
it. Let me also tell you, last year I went to Washington for the NSBA, and it was with special ed. And this lady, I found out how hard she works, and I found out how much she does. And it is absolutely incredible. She is, the data that she has to fight through, the kids and all of the, the time that each of the special teachers is with a student, all of that has to be calculated, and it's just an invaluable service. So there are no words to describe, but thank you very much.
And she does all that work with that beautiful smile all the time. So. Roll call, please.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Ms. Powers?
Yes.
Mr. Luke?
Yes.
Ms. Savage?
Yes.
Ms. Devine?
Yes. So motion carries. Thank you again, Pam. Make sure you grab some treats on the way out. All right. Next up, we have a presentation by the Union County Chamber of Commerce on housing. I believe it's Mr. Stanford with us this evening.
As you know, one of my goals is to kind of keep an eye on growth and housing in the area, especially, we're starting redistricting this year, or just started that last week, and some different things. So I asked Jason to come. Some of you may have seen this presentation, maybe in a different committee, but I thought it was important that all of you had access to the same information. So Jason, take it away.
All right, I appreciate it. Thank you all for letting me be here tonight. And sure. First, congratulations on the re-election.
Okay.
So,
thank you
very
much.
Good there. Yes, my name is Jason Stanford. I'm the Development Services Manager for the Economic Development Partnership here in Marysville and Union County. So, as Diane mentioned earlier, we are taking a bit of a dive into some residential development. It's always such a hot button issue in Union County. So, where this kind of stemmed from was back earlier in the summer, the commissioners had started a housing task force to kind of look at workforce type housing in Union County and to make sure that we are constructing the types of houses that obviously young professionals or young families would be attracted to it, and also you know, senior living and aging in place type housing. So a lot of this is really good data, so I'll try not to like blow your mind with all this because there's a lot here, but if at any point you guys have questions, just let me know. I'll go through this a little bit quickly. I know you have a tight agenda, but one of the things that we are talking about, especially in the city of Marysville, is the types of occupied housing. Is it residential or owner-occupied, or is it rental-occupied? So as of 2018, what we're seeing is that basically within the entire city of Marysville, we have 8,200 units of residential development, that's single family and multifamily, okay? 63%, just actually around 64% of those are owned by their occupants, and then the remainder are rentals. But what we can see over time, when we go back from 2010 and then even further back to 2000, is that those numbers are actually dropping as far as owner-occupied. There's a lot of reasons for that. Obviously, there's a lot of single-family type development going on here in Union County, Marysville. But these trends are actually going on across the nation where there are more rental units being brought to market. So this is nothing of a concern for us. I think we're actually getting on par with more of the Central Ohio region, especially when we look at other communities like Dublin and Hilliard out there. So we're just kind of adjusting ourselves back to like a normal level for that. Comparison, Marysville, Union County, next spot down. I don't know if this has got a pointer thing on it, but again, it kind of compares the city of Marysville at 63, almost 64%, versus Ohio statewide average is 66%, and then the national average of just about 64%. So again, we're really right on our average mark there. And then when we look at our median gross rent, obviously we want to make sure that the units that are being brought to market are affordable. And again, that doesn't necessarily mean like traditional Section 8 type housing, but that's just affordable for the types of residents that we have and the industry sectors that we have. So Marysville actually is a little bit above normal, the statewide average. Now we rank just around almost $900 a month in rent, which has gone up since 2010 and then gone up dramatically since 2000. So we are seeing our rents increase pretty significantly here in Marysville. We are higher than the statewide average, but again, there's a lot more residential type or rental type of development going on in Ohio, so it's just a market issue there. And then we are still below the national average, which is just a little bit shy of $1,000 a month. So again, why we look at this is to make sure that we're bringing to market the types of units that people can afford to have. When we look at single-family home value, again, this is home value, which is always lower than your purchase price, so keep that in mind. Earlier this year, this is actually a little bit dated now, I admit that, but Marysville's home value is $173,000. So Union County average around $186,000, and then when you look at the region as a whole, it's a little bit lower, $166,000, and then statewide is a lot lower at $135,000. So even though we are below countywide average and we are above the regional average, we are still pretty well below the national average, which is good for us. So, but keep in mind that's your home value. That's not necessarily when you go buy a house. I think I have a slide on that coming up as well. Marysville home sales, according to data that was provided, again, this was a few months ago, I think back in July. There was 1,300 single-family homes sold between 2017 and 2019 in the city of Marysville. So that's not only new houses that were constructed, but that's turnover in our existing stock. Okay, and that also that only includes sales that were conducted between realtors and not I bought my house, my grandparents' house, you know, that kind of thing. So these were official tract sales. During that same period, the average sale price increased 12% from $196,000 to $219,000. So that goes back to talking about your sale value or your home value versus the sale value. What we're seeing, why this is important, is because we're showing a little bit of a housing bubble going on in Marysville. The average sale price of single-family units has reached $255,900, which is a 16% increase. And again, this was since in between January 1st and the end of July. So within those first few months of the year, it's actually increased even further than the original $219,000. So, and I just checked this morning, and we're actually still right around average. That $255,000 is still pretty accurate right now. So, from 2017 to the end of June of 2019, the average sale price has increased 30% in the city of Marysville, and that's pretty astonishing out there. That's too much too soon, I think, when we look at development out there. In the entirety, now this one shocks me a little bit, but in the entirety of Union County, 900 square foot units, or 900 single family units were sold in the last 12 months, and that was July to July, of which 531 were sold under 300,000. Okay. So when we're talking about, you know, people who maybe can't afford to live in our community, this last one shows it's not just Marysville, it's actually a countywide issue. And we are not unlike Delaware County or some of the other fast-growing counties as well. Okay, single-family permits from 2012 to 2018. You can see in the, I guess, the brighter orange there is actually the county level. So at the end of October, we had filed 359 permits for new single-family residences countywide, excluding Marysville. And then for the city of Marysville itself, we're at 193 single-family units. And what this is interesting to us is that actually, just by the end of October, the city of Marysville had set the record for the amount of new units permitted, you know, since at least 2012. But then the county has dropped back remarkably from where it was last year. And a lot of that county information there is actually because Jerome Village has kind of slowed down their construction a little bit. So we are seeing a slowdown countywide, but Marysville is still on fire for the most part. And just to show, too, a little bit of a statistic here, typically Marysville is responsible for about 40% of the total residential growth in Union County. So between 2012 and 2018, there are 2,500 single-family permits filed countywide, and 951 of those were in Marysville. So we always kind of follow that lead, even when we had the recession and development was a lot lower. We still maintain about 40% in Marysville. Okay, so talking a little bit about multifamily development, this goes back a long time, 1970 to 2016. And what this shows is the total number of multifamily units that are available in Union County. What we're seeing here, which was interesting, is that most of our multifamily development happened between the 1990 and 1999 area, so the 90s, when we added 856 multifamily units. And a lot of those we're familiar with today, that's the Arbors, Elmwood Villas, Bridgewater, Watkins Glens, you know, some of the larger developments occurred in the 90s. But what's concerning to us is, of course, in between the 2000 and current, we were just shy of 350. So we've really dropped off from the 90s. And that, I should say, doesn't include the new apartments that have been permitted, like out by Benny's and some of those areas. Just again, it's a little bit of interesting data that shows that we've not really kept up a lot of our multifamily development. This, I apologize, I know I can barely read this, so I don't expect you guys to. But what this actually shows is all the active and pending residential developments within the city of Marysville. And this column here, kind of in the middle, shows that we are at 1,018 single family units that are remaining to be built. So they're approved, ready to go. We just need the shovels in the ground, so that's right now. And then talking about multifamily and all the new development that we are seeing with that, We have 1,691 new single-family units or multifamily units coming to Marysville as well. And a lot of that does include, like Cook's Point, for example, just across the road here, some development at Mill Valley, their last phase, Kenmore Place, which is behind the Meyer, that'll be coming online next year, Woodside, which is the substantial development there by Bennings. So we are seeing our multifamily pick up, but it's good to see that type of development planned for the future here, next couple of years. Okay, so when we look at our county seat comparisons, now we did not include the city of Columbus because it's the big monkey in the room, or you know, however you want to call that, but it throws off our data. So what we wanted to look at was all the county seats within the region, and really where do we fit as far as our population and then the percentage of owner-occupied housing. So you can see here, Marysville actually is the highest percentage of owner-occupied within our county seat type communities. You can see Bell Fountain is just a good comparison. They're at just over 55% owner-occupied. And then the lowest we could find, which was Mount Vernon and Mount Gilead, at just over 51%. So we're pretty high, but again, it's not substantially high. It's getting higher, or it's getting lower. But we're still pretty much on par with the rest of the communities out there. But when we throw in our outer belt communities, so when we start talking about Worthington, Dublin, and Hilliard, Gahan, all those guys, we actually fall to the bottom of the pack, which is interesting as well. So you can see there the community in Central Ohio, non-county seat type community, that has the highest percentage of owner-occupied housing is actually Worthington, with almost 81% of their housing stock owner-occupied. Same with Upper Arlington, they're at 80%, and you can see going down the list, we're only above Reynoldsburg, which is 65%. So we actually have the second lowest percentage of owner-occupied units in the Outer Belt type community. So when you throw everything together, where do we fit? Well, we're pretty much right at the middle, which is good. So with our 63%, you can see most of the communities that are above us are those outer belt type communities, again, Hilliard, Dublin, etc. And then everyone below us are the traditional county seat type communities, Marion, Belfound, etc. So again, we didn't include Columbus because they have the lowest percentage of owner-occupied units at 45%. And that is low, but that's traditional for any metropolitan area. I could throw Nashville or Indianapolis or any other city up here, and usually it's very low. So nothing earth-shattering there. When we look at a regional kind of where we're headed, what we're seeing is that there is a lot of demand for multifamily development going on, and right here in Marysville is another example of that. But we've seen approximately right around 15,000 new apartments have been added over the last 5 years, and that's, again, region-wide. Since 1991, Central Ohio has needed one new residential unit for every job created. So when you're seeing an Amazon or a FedEx coming in and they say they're hiring 200 employees, then you can kind of estimate that you'll need at least 200 new homes to kind of equate that out. And that's, again, that's a normal economy, everything humming along like we've had. The scary part is, though, that since 2014, the region has added more than twice as many jobs as we have housing units. So that's why our housing market is on fire right now. It's at supply and demand. And again, it's not just Marysville. It's throughout the entire region. So just a comparison, I talked about Nashville a minute ago. Nashville added 5,300 apartments in 2018. Indianapolis was 2,000, Austin 6,400, and Charlotte was 6,377. So even though Columbus is booming, we aren't even close to being where some of our peer cities are as far as development. So, and why is that? Why is multifamily important to us? Well, obviously millennials and Gen Z now are renting much longer than they have in the past, so they're not buying homes right away. They're renting well into their 30s. And then also converse of that, our empty nesters are downsizing and selling their homes, and they prefer, you know, rental units and things, you know, low maintenance, that kind of stuff. And actually, when you look at the entire, you know, statistical range out there, the number of renters over 60 years old has risen 43% in the past decade. So they're actually kind of outstripping the millennials there in the rental opportunities. So Despite growth in downtown Columbus, there are far more apartments being built in the suburbs, in the fringe of Columbus, than downtown itself. I think it's easy for us to drive down I-70 and notice all the high-rises going up full of apartments, but there's really a lot more activity going on in those outer belt communities than there is downtown itself. So we're happy to see that growth in downtown Columbus, and that'll continue for a good while here. Just keep in mind it is occurring in other communities as well. And also, finally on the subject too, what we're talking about, a lot of new growth, there's a lot of investment going in or occurring with our older type product that's out there. So investors are purchasing, these second or third class type of multifamily projects and bringing it up, basically modernizing, bringing to code and that kind of stuff. And what that results in is, of course, increased rent. So we're seeing a little bit of a gentrification happening too, with at least some of the older type residential developments out there. So this is a little bit old, but this was construction that was underway at the end of 2018. So it talks about multifamily type projects. As you can see, there's a lot going on. Bexley, for example, had four projects representing 209 units, which now when you look at us, we have 1,600. So it's kind of funny that we're comparing that. But what it shows, though, is that there's 5,000 units that are under development in Central Ohio right now, or at least last year. And that will add almost 6 million square foot of multifamily residential to the region. So, again, that's good. We actually need more for that. So, okay, regional permitting. So, as we can see, typically, pretty much always in the past, communities have had more single-family residential than they have multifamily, at least in communities like ours. Okay. And when you compare that out through the entire region, that was always the case as well, until we got to 2011. And 2011 was the first year that we permitted more multifamily than we did single family. Okay, so when you're kind of thinking about when did everything change and why, basically 2011 coming out of the recession, it was easier for companies to develop multifamily projects than it was traditional single family. So what's kind of surprising to us, I guess, is that we've actually kept that trend going. So since 2011, we haven't looked back, and we're still adding more multifamily than single family in the region. So, okay. Talking a little bit again about peer regions. Again, we all like to compare ourselves. So the Builders Association down in Columbus, they kind of monitor what's going on in other high growth areas like Austin and Charlotte and Nashville. So as you can see, since 2010 through 2017, we've added 7,000 multifamily. I gotta make sure it's multifamily. Total resident permits. Again, in Columbus, but when you compare us to Austin with 18,000, almost 19,000, Charlotte with 15,000, and then Nashville with 13,000. This is just an example of how we are still below our peer cities. And if we want to continue to attract talent. And keep them here, obviously, not just Union County, Marysville, but all of the region needs to step up their development game a little bit. So again, this is an issue that's been going on for a while. It's kind of reaching a point where it's in the media more and more often. I think we've seen some stories out there lately about the region's development. So MORPC, which is the Mid-Ohio Regional Planning Commission, they did a study called Insight 2050 a couple years ago. And what that study does, it uses all the regional projections for population employment through 2050 to forecast where we will be as far as residential development, employment, job growth, etc. And what that plan had kind of fished out is that the region as a whole is expected to grow up by a million plus people by 2050. Those people will add about 300,000 more jobs to the region between 2010 and 2050. And as I said earlier, you get one job for one house, so we're looking at the addition of 300,000 new housing units that will be needed just to accommodate that growth. Union County, by 2050, we're expected to surpass 84,000 in population. And Marysville, again, is expected to surpass around just shy of 34,000, which is, again, about a 40% tally over Union County. The next stat here is really a reversal of what we've seen, pretty much the entirety of our development history. An unprecedented 81% of future household growth will be households without children. And I think we can see this now. This is why we're in the second fastest growing county in Ohio, and you guys aren't building another high school or another elementary. You know, that mm-hmm. we're seeing that now, that not all growth is a mom and dad and two kids out there. So when you look at that and then you forecast, you add a forecast for a shrinking demand for larger lots, single-family homes, which is basically lots greater than 0.16 acres, and an increasing demand for well-located, smaller lot detached homes and condos and multifamily housing. That really shows the changing demographics of our community. So, again, we're seeing it now, and we'll see it much more in the future as time goes on. So, and just in our county, there's a demand out there, or will be, for 140,000 smaller lot detached single-family homes and then 160,000 multifamily units. So these places throughout the region will have to deal with those types of developments coming in. We also worked with the Industry Association to do a housing need assessment, and this was actually earlier this year, so this is still pretty fresh. But really what this plan looked at was if there was two growth scenarios. One was a high growth rate, and then one was at where we are now, okay? So it really looked at the 1990 through 2017 when we experienced 1.9% growth on the regional level, and then the high growth rate, or the lower growth rate, was 1.3 since 2010. It still basically says Union County will need to add 474 to 778 new units per year through 2050. So again, that goes from the high to the low. Regardless, that's a lot of units for our community. And just as an example of that, what we've seen yearly since 1990 to 2017 was 363 new units. So we are significantly shy of even our lowest need out there. So. And then we talk about multifamily units. We'll need to add about 148 to 243 new units per year. And then single family will be 352 to 525 units. Year as well, so fun stuff. And then, as you can imagine, when we start talking, you know, burdens on taxpayers and you know the governments out there, you know, what does this mean? So, the city of Marysville actually went through last year and did a study, a fiscal analysis on the residential development that's occurring out there. So, they basically worked off an assumption that we're adding 2,000 to 2,400 single-family units between 2018 and 2037. Which is possible. I mean, obviously, with Marysville adding 300, almost 400 homes this year, we can see that average value is $203,000, and the household income of the occupants was $79,500. So that's right on par with what we have. So that was some of the data that they used. But basically, what it shows is that if we build as we are currently building now, okay, by around 2024. The city of Marysville will have issues financially, okay? And this is based off of, you know, obviously service to those new residents and that types of development that is providing water sewer service that's farther away, and, you know, when you talk about density, new roads and streets and all that stuff. So if things continue the way they are now around 2024, we'll start looking at some negative impacts out there. But also, I guess on the flip side of that is there's always opportunity for us to change and prevent this from happening. Really what was interesting is that the report showed that multifamily development won't really have a negative impact on the city's revenue at least through 2037. So it went through the entire plan, the timeline there, and showed that we'll be okay if we keep adding more multifamily development to kind of balance down some of that single family. And again, all this is just data that, you know, it's forecast, it can change, but it's really interesting that we're taking a look at this and trying to figure out where do we go from here. So, I always like to show this because this is, you got to love social media, right? So we put out on Facebook a couple years ago, we asked young professionals about their opinions of housing in Union County, Marysville. Really, people enjoy the community, they like the community, but as the first one said, that they wish they had more things to attract millennials, like public transportation, less cheap or generic suburban homes, and more entertainment options out there. another one says that I think if I wanted an apartment, it wouldn't find anything appealing in Marysville. Are there any nice townhomes, condos, or apartments in Marysville? I'm not aware of any. Okay, so there's a little bit of a communication issue that we're seeing out there as well. Marysville may be a good option, but I can't think of any apartments in the city that I would consider. I would more likely look at Dublin and Delaware, etc. And then the last one, I want to live near places I frequent, whether that's work or leisure. It's got to be one or the other. So from our perspective, when we're looking not at just the type of development, but where the development goes, what are the commercial amenities that go with it, what are the parks and recreational opportunities, it's really important for us to consider that, especially when we're trying to attract young professionals to the community. So. And then that all ties into workforce housing and availability. This is a critical issue for us. We have to make sure that residents of all ages, incomes, backgrounds can locate housing within our community. And right now we can't, okay? And what this is really, it's kind of a perfect storm, actually, when you look at the record low unemployment we have. You have the retirement of the baby boomers, and now we have affordability issues in our community. So workforce development is a huge issue, and it will be for years to come. Right now, within a 15-mile radius of Marysville, there's 7,700 unfilled positions, okay? So that's a lot of jobs that are waiting for employees, and if we as a community can't fill those roles for our employers, the employers are going to go elsewhere. So that's kind of the simmer down of all that stuff. So housing perspectives, okay, preferences. So young professionals and empty nesters are actually sharing similar housing preferences. I know it's kind of made out that young professionals and millennials and empty nesters and boomers like hate each other. Which, you know, they could, but when it comes to housing, they're pretty much in sync with each other, which is very cool. They prefer multiple housing options, which, again, goes back to single family and multifamily. And then they want townhomes, apartments, things that they can grow out of and then into better housing. And then on the flip side of that, we have to have step-down type housing available for our retirees, okay? Especially as our generations get older, we're going to have more and more of this. So we got to make sure that they can leave their you know, larger homes and still find home in Marysville as well. And then the rest of this is quality of life issues. You know, public transportation is a big topic here in Union County. We don't really have any. So we've been discussing with some of our partners, COTA, and some others about how do we enhance that opportunity here. Walkable and bikeable neighborhoods, and we're getting better in Marysville. I think we all saw some of the bike routes that's going in on the downtown streets. There's also trail opportunities that we're working on as well. And again, that's to provide those amenities that residents want. Accessible IT infrastructure, I think we've gotten a lot better at this. This is broadband. Everybody has to have internet. I mean, that's a basic utility nowadays, okay? Entertainment, dining, and shopping options. So that's a chicken and the egg thing. Most of our retailers out there want to see the residents first, but we can't get the residents until we have the retail. So when everybody asks you about where's the Target, where's the Kohl's, et cetera, we're working on it, but we need to be a little bit bigger before we can get those types of big boxes in here. Okay. Safe and crime-free neighborhoods, clean environment, aesthetically pleasing neighborhoods, which in Marysville, you know, we're pretty good on that level, getting better. Parks and recreational opportunity, exceptional educational opportunities for children and adults. So, you know, kudos to what you guys are doing to address that issue. And then, obviously, we're working on the adult component as well, because especially when it counts for workforce development, we got to make sure our incumbents are trained and ready to go. And then diversity. So we're very white in Union County, and I don't know how we really increase diversity. It's something that'll happen as we grow. But really what we're seeing is that people do want diversity, and, you know, there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. Recent steps in the right direction. So the development here is actually behind Meyer, so that's Kenmore Place, one of the early plans that they submitted. The city is working on rezoning efforts right now, which will actually consolidate some of the zoning districts out there, make it easier for people to come and build here. Easier equals cheaper, and then hopefully that'll get passed on to residents. City Council's offered their support and approval of multifamily developments, as we've seen. I know that tolerance is kind of getting maxed out a little bit. I know there's some worry out there, but I think in the long term we'll keep on adding multifamily. As I mentioned earlier, we created the Uptown the Union County Housing Task Force. So we are looking at other issues specifically to workforce housing, and we also have an Uptown Development Committee, which is working on like infill development and second, third floor type residential opportunities. So I think we especially can't leave out the Uptown District. There's a lot of opportunity there, so we just need to take advantage of that. MORPC has instituted a housing strategy, which I'll get into a little bit here later. City has done the home improvement grant program and then also the Uptown facade improvement, so the work on the Elks building. I'm glad that the blue didn't kill you guys. You know, I saw some comments on it, but it looks great. So. But kudos to the city for doing that. We talked about that for years, and they finally decided to do it. They've also been working on sidewalk repairs, safe routes to school program, as you guys know, and then improvement to trails, park systems, and other amenities. So from a city standpoint, they have all the infrastructure in place, and they're just continuing to improve there. So I talked about the housing strategy. This is a project of MORPC, City of Columbus, regional partners, and then including Marysville and Union County. And what it really is it's a task force that is developing a housing strategy to kind of guide investment and policy region-wide. So it's not just Marysville and Union County working on one project. It's us working with Dublin and Hilliard and whoever is at the table. Because a lot of what we're going through, we're not alone with. So it's easier to solve problems together than trying to do it one-on-one. So it will review our existing conditions out there so we really understand our housing market, develop strategies and policy recommendations that we can take back to, say, the commissioners or city council, and then implement those policy changes. It'll also track progress and create evaluation matrix. Which obviously that's important. We shouldn't be doing projects without some kind of evaluation out there. We will have a permanent advisory committee, which Terry Aaron with the City of Marysville has been involved with from the get-go, so I think he'll probably stay on that committee once it matures. And then there will be a final report for all of our community officials out there. So. And I threw this in here talking about population growth. Since 1970, that's our benchmark year. That was the decade before Honda. So you can see really where we were at, and this is countywide, so this is kind of fun to us to see that back in 1970, we were just a little over 20,000 countywide, and we are now pushing, I believe, 58,000 here countywide, too. The red line in the middle shows where our last official population estimate was, so I just kind of put that in there to show where we're going or where we're forecast to go. Which is, again, just shy of that 90,000 in population. So we are still the second fastest growing county in Ohio. Last year, 2018, we were first. So kudos to Delaware for taking that title from us, but I'm sure we'll gain that back here shortly. between 1970 and 2018, our population increased 151%. So that's amazing growth for our mm-hmm. county. And again, we have a lot more growth to go. So we're about midway through. Between basically 2018 and 2050, we're expected to add around 50% of population just as the region grows. And then when you look at the entirety of it from 1970 through expected to be in 2050, our population will have increased by 255%. So that's just amazing to us. So to keep moving forward, what we recommend, and again, this kind of goes back more to our policymakers at the city level, but you know, you guys might find benefits of this too. But key to our future is to allow for higher density development. We can't just continue to building in cornfields and using our resources. So we have to promote higher density development. Likewise, reducing barriers to affordability, which is cost, bureaucracy, infrastructure design, infrastructure and design standards out there. Promote smaller single-family homes, encourage more apartments. And the key to this, too, is we have to remember that people who live in multifamily developments, they're not just commercial people. Don't look at them like commercial. Don't zone multifamily like you would commercial. They're still residents of your city, so they need to be within access to parks and all that quality of life stuff. So that's really one of the things that we're looking at. I touched on it earlier, specifically the Uptown District encourage infill development and underutilized properties. Utilize incentives that encourage the specific development and price points that we want, okay? We very rarely give any type of incentive for residential development. I don't think there's an appetite for that. But if there's an opportunity to get a really good product out of a developer, then maybe we should start looking at that. But only if we get what we need out of that. Down payment assistance, first-time home buyer assistance. I believe last year was the first year that we became ineligible for USDA programs, which is unfortunate. But basically, Marysville got too big, so we're not rural enough. And that is impacting our first-time home buyers. And then continue to improve our quality of life, parks, shopping, amenities, education, obviously. And then all of our neighborhood aesthetics, make sure that our neighborhoods are clean, the houses are in good repair, and things like that. So, yes, questions? All right. Have any questions? I realize I went through that in like 10 seconds.
Jason, yes. You mentioned that for every new job, we need another house. And we've got about 1,000 single-family homes and about 1,700 home homes. How many new jobs are you looking at, just kind of guessing forward?
Well, hopefully a lot. I mean, otherwise I won't have a job, you know, in economic development. But I think more or less what we're seeing now is catching up to where we should be. It's not building now for the future. Mm-hmm. It's we're catching up from the last round of job growth that we had in the 90s. So we're basically to the point right now where when Texas Roadhouse announced that they're coming to town, we got some celebratory, you know, posts on Facebook, but a lot of the questions was, where are they going to find the workers? Mm-hmm. So jobs are almost irrelevant at this point because we need the workers, you know. And I say that kind of tongue-in-cheek. You guys saw the Amazon project that's hopefully coming to Jerome Township. You guys seen the FedEx. You know, those are significant projects. But we won't be able to do those for much longer unless we get more people in the county. So it's not really right now moving forward. It's a catching up. It's a response.
And the other question I had was, if you had a crystal ball when you were looking at growth and development in and around Marysville, which general direction do you see the housing going? Is the housing going to, we know we've had Mill Valley and some other growth in this area to the north end. Do you see it more down 33, 36 for Delaware?
Yeah, that's it kind of talks about or touches on our growth districts. We actually have a few areas in the county that we've identified as growth districts. Okay. So in the grand scheme of things, what we're seeing or what we're believing will happen will be most of our residential development will happen between Marysville and Dublin. Okay. And I think we're seeing that now. I mean, Jerome is growing like crazy. But within the city of Marysville itself, it's moving south. I don't think there is a lot of appetite for the city to annex further north. I think once Mill Valley's done, I think it's done, okay? But I do think we'll see a lot of infill, specifically around the airport area, around Coleman's Crossing, the Innovation Park, and then really further south. So if I had a crystal ball and I could look at the next, you know, 10 years where we're going to stand here in 2029, I would see Marysville and Dublin being butted up against each other. I think that's where we're headed. So.
Thank you.
So this might be for Todd as well as you. I was thinking about your comment of residential growth with people that don't have any kids. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering if that started to really happen in this area, does that mean that there would be more money for the district for the same number of kids?
Well,
okay.
I mean, my opinion, when we're talking about pushing for apartments and multifamily housing, that runs contrary to the benefit of the school district because it's not bringing additional, I mean, it brings additional income tax to the city, but it does not bring additional tax income to the school district. So it really runs contrary to what we would like to see.
Okay.
And one thing we look at too, and again, you're the expert, you know, with finances and things like that. Multifamily development is taxed at commercial levels, okay? So especially when you see a lot of these Bridgewaters and, you know, the the big multifamily type developments going in there, it's not like it would be another Mill Valley. Okay, so that's really where I think you guys as a school district needs to, you understand where we're going, I guess. So how do you guys need to prepare for that? If it is something that harms the school district or could harm the school district, we just need to be prepared for that. And how can we solve that before it becomes an issue? You know? And it's not necessarily that we are pushing for multifamily. It's just that we are seeing that demand out there, and we know that demand will continue. And if we don't take advantage of a demand in general, we're going to lose out on that population. So,
well, what about single-family houses for families that don't have kids?
That would benefit us financially.
Mm-hmm. Is that one of the areas of growth that you were talking about, or is that not?
Yeah, none of this is meant to imply that we're not going to have any more single-family. I mean, that's not going to change. I just think that we will be further diversified out there. And especially when we look at the aging boomer population, you're going to see a lot more families that have grown out of that traditional unit. You know, you will see a retired couple living in a single family home or an apartment. So just in general with demographic changes, people aren't having kids. I mean, it hasn't really caught up here yet because we're more of a traditional type community. But when you look at a lot of the millennials and the young professionals out there, they're either not having kids until well later in life, or they have no desire to have children at all. So the question becomes for us, what do we attract here? Will it be those types of people who will benefit the school district, but will change the housing market? You know, so mm-hmm. There's so much out there, we just don't know. But I think when you guys are looking at other cities, check it, you know, right now look at Delaware. You know, how is their school districts doing? How's their growth? Because that's really a comparison for us right now. Or at least it will be 10 years ago, you know.
So I do have a question. When you said the multi-units mm-hmm. Would not benefit the schools. Mm-hmm. Now I own some single mm-hmm. homes. I don't own any multi-unit. But I have to turn in the names of those people so they can collect the taxes from them. Mm-hmm. Isn't that the same way that would work?
Yeah, I think so. What I meant by that, though, is just, again, it goes back to the traditional family unit that we're seeing. A lot of renters are older, or they're young professionals. They're not child age, or they don't desire okay. children. So I'm not seeing it as necessarily a benefit or a detraction, because we are adding population, but they're not necessarily adding kids to your district.
But they would add money to the district.
They would add money, yeah.
If I can chime in, Amy. I mean, for instance, the issue with multifamily housing, for instance, that area that's going across from Benny's, that's likely to be under a TIF, which means that we will get very little additional tax dollars. And then, you know, coming from a previous district that was very fast-growing, there were always a lot of apartments that they said, well, there's not going to be any kids. Well, that only lasts for so long. Right. There's always more kids.
Right.
So you've got a development that's bringing very little tax dollars. Mm-hmm. You've got a bunch of new kids coming in, and we're getting, right now we're showing decreasing state revenue. Mm-hmm. Additional kids wouldn't necessarily bring that state revenue up, depending on what happens right. with the state funding formula. So in essence, what it would mean would be a tax increase to our current residential taxpayers would be inevitable.
In regards to the multi-family units, I do agree that we need them, and we need them to bring workers, and they need to be reasonably priced. But I'm a little bit concerned about like school safety as far as busing, because you can say there aren't going to be any kids, but I think there's going to be some kids.
Oh, yeah.
And that's going to definitely increase. And our infrastructure right now is pretty tight. Mm-hmm. It's not New York City, but at 4 o'clock, it kind of feels
that way.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I get you. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, and I think what more than anything, what we're looking at is just that continuum of housing. Because we are losing young professionals to other communities, okay? And I think what the region, including us, is looking at is more providing the opportunities through multifamily to at least get them in the door, get them in our community. And I think that once these young professionals settle down, get married, and they do have children, they're not going to stay necessarily in multifamily. And, you know, if there are other housing options out there, single family housing, that's where they go. Really, I think a part of our issue is we're blocking the lifting up of residents. When we're seeing a lot of growth in Richwood, for example, because people can't afford to live in Marysville. Okay, which, hey, from a county perspective, that's great, you know. But from your perspective or from a city of Marysville perspective, what can we do to bring those residents here first before shipping them off to single-family homes or other communities? Bell Fountain's a perfect example. We're sending people, residents, that would be here paying income tax and whatever else to Bell Fountain. So that's really from our perspective, from a workforce development issue, that's kind of what we're looking at. And then on the other side of that, we don't want to lose our seniors and empty nesters, but we're seeing them move back, you know, to other communities. So I truly feel for you guys. I mean, it's going to be a wild ride here, you know. And I think, you know, from an economic development standpoint, we got to be smart about this. We can't grow too fast at all. We don't want to become some of our other counties that are around us where they've grown and then just, oh my gosh, they're in the world of hurt. So What can we do now to kind of guide that? We know it's coming. It's already kind of happening. So how can we work together, you know, with you guys or the policy makers at the city or county or whoever, to make sure that we are growing smart and not putting more burden back on you guys or the library or whoever. So.
And I mean, I think really we'll talk about residential growth. I mean, you haven't talked at all about the business side. I mean, you kind of talked about the business side, but we're focusing on the residential growth. But you can't forget that the reason for doing this is to make sure that we continue to attract businesses, and businesses are generally pretty good for the schools as far as tax dollars. It brings in the tax dollars without the cost, but...
When they're not TIFed.
Right,
when they're not TIFed, yes. But as well, lots of good information, and I'm glad you're on that committee too, and trying to stay on top of things as much as you can, right?
That's right. So.
Okay.
Thank you.
Well, thank
all
you
right.
very
thank
much,
you.
Jason.
Thank you
very
much, Jason.
All right. Next up, we have our presentation from Navin Elementary. Miss Lynette and Shelley.
Excuse me.
And yeah, would you like to do your community partner first?
So we chose as our community partner, community partnership award, to provide that to the Elks.
Come on up.
Really the Elks organization. Come on up. This is Billie Jo Humble, and she was a member of our Navin family for many years, so she's the president.
Yes.
I did not know, so. and this is Kermit Morris. He is a member of the Elks, and really, he's the face we see most often when they come to our school yearly. So every year, and this just happened last week? Or
last week.
The Elks came, and they brought a dictionary for every third grader in our building, and really in all the schools in Marysville and Union County. So it is pretty cute to see the kids get the dictionaries, and then you gave them a word to look up, which was Florida or something.
Florida,
yeah. And they were really, I mean, they were all, like, really into it, but they're so excited, and I know we have lots of kids that would not have that opportunity to ever have a dictionary of their very own, so they greatly, greatly appreciate it, and so do we. So I just wanted to thank you so much for doing that for our kids every year and for all the kids in Union County.
You're welcome.
Thanks.
Thank you.
What was the word? Florida?
I guess so, yeah. Florida.
Because that's where we're headed.
Okay.
He did and it was also cold that day.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. You're very welcome.
We're really happy to do this. We apply for a grant every year from our National Foundation, which is the charitable arm of our organization. And we give out about 800 dictionaries every year. And we're around 10,000 now. This is our 13th year. And we always ask the teachers every year, are you sure you still need dictionaries? I mean, everybody's got cell phones. Everybody's got laptops.
Right.
And do you need them? And the teachers always come back with, yes, yes, yes. So we'll keep trying to do this and see you next year.
Hey, we can't wait. We appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Oh, yes. Thank you. Thank you so
much. Again, we're thrilled to host you all tonight and our guests. We're going to talk a little bit about our focus this year, which is on some social-emotional learning here at Navin. So I think our district, if you could say anything about it, is committed 100% to educating the whole child. And social-emotional learning and social-emotional intelligence is a big part of everybody, especially our children. And so there's like five skills that we really focus on when we're talking about social-emotional learning or SEL. Self-management, self-awareness, social awareness, relationship skills, and responsible decision-making. And really the home, community, schools, classrooms, they all work together to contribute to the social-emotional learning of students. We felt that we have a lot of students that haven't had the opportunity to see role models modeling these skills or practice these skills either at home or even at school as much as we would like. So we decided to focus on this this year and in the future for our kids. So we felt like we had a really good foundation for social emotional learning based on our five simple rules, and we've had those for a long time. The first three are really just love your kids. Just love them no matter what. The fourth one is really every child that walks through the door really belongs to all of us and is all of our responsibilities. And five, every child deserves our best every day. And I will say that our staff lives those five rules constantly. So we felt like we had that really good foundation to build upon with the social-emotional learning. So these are the three questions we asked ourselves when we were starting to plan on what we could do to make our social-emotional learning opportunities more robust for our kids. So the first one was, how do we incorporate SEL skills building-wide with consistency? The second one was, how do we help students to connect with other students and staff members in all areas, or all grades? And three, how do we create more connections with positive adult mentors for all students? So with those questions in mind, we started a committee, a SEL committee, and I couldn't be prouder to say that practically the whole staff came, and it looked like a staff meeting, not just a committee meeting, which told us that this was something that we shared beliefs that we really felt was important. So when we looked at how could we make this consistent building-wide, we really moved towards the PACS training, which everybody took this fall. And if you're wondering what PACS is, PACS kind of represents peace, productivity, health, and happiness in your environment. And it really provides consistent language. It provides common experiences. Every classroom makes a vision of what they want to see, hear, feel, and do at Navin. We talk about specific situations in making good decisions and self-regulating. Like it might be at recess, or it might be when they're getting their Chromebook out. It could be in a million different areas. And the class together talked about what they want to see more of and what they want to see less of. Because we tell kids a lot, don't do this, but we don't necessarily teach them what they should do more of to improve. So that was kind of the self-regulation piece and decision-making as well. We also know that storytelling, it brings communities together. So This year we're participating in a program. It was brought to us by one of our teachers called One School, One Book. And so every student before Christmas will get a book. We voted on it. It's going to be Because of Winn-Dixie. Every student will get a copy of the book from our PTO as a Christmas present. We'll have a kickoff assembly in January. And then all of us here at school and hopefully parents at home will do read-alouds through the book at the same time. So our entire building will be having that shared experience in reading and storytelling. We may even have fourth graders come down and read to first graders and that kind of thing. It'll culminate in a night with parents and teachers and staff and kids where we celebrate that we shared this one book in our school. The other thing we decided to do was bedtime stories for kids. And our staff has signed up to do them, or maybe have some community members do some. What they look like is we do a story once a week. Somebody, this was Mandy Poe. She was our very first person who did it. The PTO kind of advertised her. That's her book that she wrote and had published. And we're reading stories for kids and giving them the opportunity to watch them whenever they want and to access us as people, because the stories are done at home with family and pets and friends. Her dog was crawling on her. It was adorable. And so kids can have, those kids that don't have the opportunity and don't have the chance to have someone read to them would be able to access a story from us. And they also means that our fourth grader might get to know who Mrs. Poe is, who they might not ever get to meet because, you know, they came in third grade and never got to know her. So we're all signed up. I think Shelley did hers with her family.
Sure did.
I'm not till, by the time I signed up, I was way in February or something. So a couple other things we put in place are currently we're working on the student welcoming committee. We have a fairly large transiency population, and since the beginning of this school year, after school started, we've had almost 20 kids come, which is almost a classroom, in all grades and areas. So we have, we're planning on having student ambassadors at every grade level. So when somebody new comes to Navin, they can meet a friend right off the bat who can show them around, who can introduce them to friends, play with them, eat lunch with them. Just today, we had a little girl and her mom move here from Florida. They speak no English, only Spanish. And we have two fourth grade girls who are fluent in Spanish, and they took them around and talked to them. And the little girl, she was going to cry when she came in, but by the time they left, the mom was hugging them, and the little girl was smiling because she had somebody to greet her and make her feel wanted. So that's going to be, I think, important for our students here to feel like they have a sense of belonging if they're new. Mindful practices. Almost every classroom does deep breathing. It helps them to relax, calm their body, visualize something relaxing. It really helps them to get ready to learn or deal with something that might be traumatic in their lives at that moment. So that's pretty common in our classrooms. We are always proud of our mentoring program with our firefighters and big brothers and big sisters. They come once a week on Friday and eat breakfast with the kids or lunch and play board games, and it really is meaningful for those select kids that need that extra support, and they do develop some great relationships. But our committee was saying that's great for those kids, but we have a lot of other kids that have some needs to connect with somebody, an adult mentor of some sort. And so we made a list as a staff of other kids that may have low self-esteem, they may be going through a trauma at home temporarily or ongoing, they may be new, they may be shy, whatever it is. And we wrote their names on hearts, and that's why we call them heart kids. And every staff member, most staff members, took one or two names, took hearts, and they have committed to touching base with those kids once a week. Maybe in the hallway, maybe eating lunch with them, maybe visiting them in their classroom, so that everybody feels connected. The last thing we did is our Navin clubs. And so we only met twice. This was a lot of work, but it touches all 435 kids in the building. So we only do them once every 2 weeks for about 40 minutes at the end of the day. They are pure interest-based clubs. We wanted kids to just want to do it, want to do something they really loved and were interested in. We have community members that are running some of the clubs, and our staff members run a lot of the clubs. so far it's been, I would say, pretty popular with the kids. They are really loving it, but I think the adults are loving it just as much. Keith Watson, if anybody knows him, one of our firefighter friends, he's doing building club. And he's gotten Lowe's and Home Depot to donate a lot of building kits with hammers and goggles. So I like to check his fingers every time he leaves. But they are really loving it so far. And it is allowing us the opportunity, again, to really touch kids' interests, but also for them to meet other other adults and staff members and mentors that are running the clubs. And it's multi-grade, so it might be somebody in kindergarten working with a third grader or whatever. And that's what I've noticed the most, is kids waving to other kids in the hallway that they wouldn't have normally gotten to know. Here's some here's some pictures from the last 2 weeks. This group here with the puzzle club, that's kindergarten through third kids in that picture that I can guarantee you didn't know each other. It's just fun. It's quick and easy. But really, the kids are so excited. That's all they talk about. I've had parents say that's all they talk about.
It's pretty cool.
Cooking club sounds delicious, right? Sewing club, they're making pot holders right now. I've never used to weave those pot holder things. So that's what they're doing there. I do the sign language club with Mrs. Morendo. So every 5 minutes, I'm turning around, somebody's signing to me. Okay. Remember all that stuff. But a bracelet club you can almost not see. And again, jazzercise by another member of our community. The community participation has been really, really wonderful. I can't say enough about them. So what will this do for us? We're hoping that this will, again, bring our school community into a more attached, close place where everybody feels welcome and wanted and loved by staff members, community members, other kids. That's what we're hoping for. Only time will tell. We think having that sense of belonging will also really help them be better students and really help their learning. So I wanted to end with this little video clip. Last week was Mr. Rogers Day with the cardigan sweaters. Mm-hmm. And so Mrs. Despotorich's first grade was very inspired by all of that, especially some of the things on the Life Vest Inside, Kindness Boomerang, that's a website that's pretty neat. So they made this kindness project, and they did it all on their own. I mean, Mrs. Despotorich helped with the filming and stuff, but they came up with all the different scenarios, the ways that they could show kindness. The original one is over 5 minutes long, so I'm going to show you a tiny snippet of it, but it just kind of gives you an idea of what 6- and 7-year-olds can really do and create if we give them the opportunity. At the end, if you see the video from the beginning, he does that for somebody else. He brings them their lunch, And so it kind of goes full circle. That was their idea, to end it in the same way, like a boomerang comes back to you. So that's it. We're hoping for some really great results, and it sure is rewarding to see all the kids smiling and happy and just enjoying themselves. So anyway, thank you.
That was awesome.
Questions, comments?
I love those little clubs.
Yeah.
I wanted to come and learn sign language, but I didn't know if I could get off.
Oh, sure, you can come. We'll be a little behind, but we'll catch up.
Yeah. Well, I know the kids are having a great time. It was so funny because I was here this last week and started out in the puzzle room. So I helped, and they had Legos in there. So I got to talk to some of the kids about what they were creating and help with some puzzles. Stopped in at the dress-up room where we saw lots of princesses and superheroes and things like that. And then just a plain piece of shiny fabric that they were using to create something. And then I wanted to check the fort building room, and they'd talked to, I think, your PE teacher, and he had some PVC pipes so that they could create a bigger structure instead of just making forts by taking blankets and putting them over tables. So I went in and I said, "Hey, how'd the fort building go today?" And I think there's probably some fourth grade boys in that fort building club, and they were like, "Oh my gosh, it was awesome! We built a humongous fort," and they were so excited about it. But then I walked past the yoga classroom, and this was at the end of the 45 minutes, and there was like 12 little kids all just laying on the floor, and I stuck my head in, like, "Is this Shavasta?" which is rest pose, and she's like, they were just all laying there, nice and relaxed. And when they came out, and I asked one of them, I said, "Do you feel good now?" And they're like, "Yes." Oh yeah, I feel really good. You know, and just like you said, the different ages, the different grades, interacting with each other and community members. Oh yeah, the fire truck kit was pretty amazing. It was right next to the yoga room, so Shelly, they're all in rest pose, relaxing, and the other ones are pounding. So
you go, girl.
She loves it. It's by her bed.
Yeah.
She brought it to school the next day. She's like, "I love Lieutenant
Watson."
I know. I'm glad that you have it.
Well, I mean, it's making them feel so good about being here in this building. And like you said, that's what's going to open them up to feeling good about being in the classroom and learning. And
yeah,
it'll be exciting to see what happens.
Yeah.
I was trying to picture the bedtime story project. Is that like you're reading a story to your kids, then filming it, and then circulating the video or something like that?
Yeah, this was a project from our committee, and they just said, "We want more kids to be read to, and mm-hmm. so we need to make that an opportunity." So when my family did it, there was lots of cakes involved, clearly. But we just sat on the couch and we held up a book and we said why it was important to us, and then we just read it, and my kids chimed in, and then the dog jumped on, and and then it just gets published through our PTO and on our YouTube channel.
Right, so they can access it. So, and I think they show it on the announcements too, just to preview it, like, and so kids know it's there. But we wanted to do it at home so they could see us at home as, you know, people with lives, because some of them think we sleep here. You know how that is with little kids. So, so we're hoping. I know our OT talked about maybe doing some mindfulness breathing and stretching and things like that instead of a story, which I think would be nice. And so I will probably do a story in sign language. So that's what Heather and I talked about. She would read the story and I would sign, but I'll probably do one at home with dogs and that kind of thing. So it doesn't matter if it's chaotic, they just love it. So and really, when you think of somebody not having somebody to read them a bedtime story, it just seems like that we could fix that. So if you're interested in reading a bedtime story, let us know. We'll film you.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay. Jonathan, is there any public participation that you're aware of? Okay. Next up, we have the High Point Report. Ms. Savage.
Okay. I sent everyone the extended High Point Report for you to look over at your leisure, but I'm just going to cover 4 points real quick since we're going kind of long. So last night at the board meeting at High Point, we did a presentation of the 3-year building renovation project, and they're going to begin on February 2020. And it's 3 years, and there's going to be a lot of displacing and then putting back into the final location. So two major building expansions and then 100% renovation except for the Sloan Technology Center, which was just done. So January 15th is the organizational meeting for High Point, and March 25th is the all boards meeting, which is the chance for all the different departments to kind of show off what they do. Cosmetology girls will be painting your nails if you'd like. Talk to the construction program and about what they're doing. So that's March 25th, and each and every one of you are invited to attend that. And then December 17th is the intern presentations at 9 a.m. at the Early College High School. So that's just the internship activity, and it's going to be a kind of a round robin, not straight presentations as it was last year. So, and that's all I have.
Okay, thank you very much. Superintendent's report.
Okay, a couple weeks ago we hosted several school districts from Arizona, actually school district teachers, administrators, and state personnel. At that visitation, we also had Tiffin and Troy both. In addition, I was just asked yesterday to sit on a committee with the state superintendent to look at personalized learning as a statewide approach. So that takes place at the beginning of December. So pretty exciting news on that front. I wanted to congratulate fall activities, football team making the playoff game. Certainly didn't turn out the way we want, but lots of spirit and a great end to the season. Congratulate our band across the board, the highest markings and probably the best performances they've had in quite a while. So certainly proud of that. I was at University of Dayton a couple weekends ago, and cross country had two runners compete at the state level. So we will have them come probably after the first of the year to a board meeting to be recognized as well. I think it was last week we hosted a educational night for parents and community members on the that's linked to our Signs of Suicide project. I know several of you attended. We had about 50 people in attendance. And so that would be the first of many activities like that. I think some of you were going to talk about Capital Conference, so maybe I'll skip that one. Also, we are pleased to be able to use our new Impact Stadium for playoff games last weekend with Springfield and Dublin Jerome. Certainly a great way to use our facility. I did want to talk briefly. There's kind of this belief that we make all kinds of money off of that situation. The truth is, in essence, they cover the cost. So the cost to have our people work it, the cost to rent the facility, there's not, and you don't get like a $5,000 payment for using the facility or any kind of upcharge to the district. I would say probably the biggest beneficiaries would be our booster group that run the concession stands and are able to benefit. So that was good since we weren't able to host a couple home events early in the season to offset that. So I think that's important to know. At the end of October, Ashley, Heather, and I were able to present at iNACL once again. I know I mentioned that at last meeting. Went really, really well. Made some pretty great connections, actually, and are going to push forward with meeting with a group that does mastery transcripts and connections at the college level. So we'll continue that work in the spring.
And how do you mind just iNACL for people who may not know what that is? And like, I don't
know. iNACL is a group. I can't tell you what that stands for, but they are a policy group that kind of heads up on a national level, personalized learning, and lead policy change at the national level. Let's see, the stadium project, so we're still in kind of the final stages of completion. Unfortunately, the weather's been kind of up and down as far as striping. That's not been complete yet. Fence work still needs to be completed. We have some grass, sod, or hydro, whatever that is, still in the works, and then punch list items. But the trailer's coming off the property in the next probably couple weeks, and so we are in the wrapping up stages. If we could get some cooperation of whether to make the last few things happen would be fantastic. If not, you know, they have to complete that work. So whether someone will come back in the spring or not, if we can't get the striping done or something like that. So I'll keep you posted on that. Let's see. So we've been talking a lot about housing and enrollment. I would just like to let you know that we're still very flat. We are actually down 5 students. I don't know really you would call that a down, but we're pretty flat compared to this time last year. And also, on Saturday, Jonathan hosted our first of several redistricting meetings. We also had a second one last night. There's another one scheduled for next week. We've been able to take it from 20-plus options or plans or brainstorms down to 13, now down to 5. So pretty happy with the work that's taking place there. Really looking at trying to limit the impact to the number of students if possible, committing to the no longer than 1 hour ride commitment that we made a while ago, and really, you know, making sure that we have balance across the elementaries as far as socioeconomic factors and et cetera. So those are kind of the factors going into the decision making and pushing that agenda forward. We would look.
I know parents are involved in this process. About how many parents from each school? Or
there are a couple from each school, and then what will also happen is those will come forward to the building, and they will host a parent night where people can come and give feedback. So, similar to the process that we did last time.
Yeah. So
about 10-ish or so.
Anybody that's interested will have plenty of opportunity to look.
Absolutely. So we sent out an email to parents and let them know it was happening. We had one parent that was on the committee last time that was not asked this time, so he requested to be on it, and we said, absolutely, if you want to be on it, we'll put you on it. So parents will have the opportunity to see the plans, ask questions, those kind of things throughout the process. We would look to complete that sometime in the late winter, early spring to all of you. Very similar to the process we went through last time. So lots of opportunities for input and question asking along the way.
I know last time it went as smoothly as it can.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Not everybody is going to get exactly.
Sure. Yeah, right. It's. I mean, right. We know. I mean, in all transparency, we know that Northwood is the building that, at the time, a few years ago when we did it, we left it at about 73% full on purpose because we projected that growth. Mm-hmm. Now they're getting to a point of uncomfortableness. And so, you know, that building will be impacted. There's no other way to get around it. That's the one that is full, right? So there are shifts. Like I said, our enrollment isn't growing. It's just where places people are shifting to. You know, who that is or what specific communities are impacted today, I can't tell you that, but as the process evolves, we'll have a better sense of that. But I would say so far so good. Everyone's been great. I mean, there were plans everywhere from, well, build a new building to let's upset the apple cart and start from scratch to there's a wide range of varieties, so getting that down to 5 was important.
And I mean, that will most likely impact staff then too. Would you
it could.
Yeah,
it could. I think we had a few staff shifts last mm-hmm. year, shift to right. where the kids go.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. And that's it for me.
Thank you.
Sure.
Treasure.
I would just note that the 5-year forecast is on the agenda. There's no change compared to what I presented last month. If you remember, one of the biggest changes in that forecast compared to May was with our state funding.
Right.
And I talked about how back in May we were projecting losing about $600,000 in state funding due to what's the state share index, which is basically a factor in the old formula that was kind of looked at our what they call local effort. You know, how much are our residents paying in real estate taxes compared to what the state would say they can afford, or compared to other districts across the state of Ohio. And with the new formula, or you know, if we'll call it a formula, that we're in this year and next year, we were basically put on a guarantee, which put that $600,000 back into the forecast, or in essence left us flat. The reason I even bring that up is because there's been a lot of talk over the last couple weeks about the Cupp-Patterson mm-hmm. New proposed funding formula that you know potentially could be the next formula we would be under in a couple years. But a lot of that talk, originally that formula was a big benefit to us because we would have gotten additional revenue. And it's still, you know, still just a proposal. But a lot of the talk in the last couple of weeks was really around local effort and, you know, districts that have a, you know, that can afford to pay, should they be paying more. And so mm-hmm. kind of reminded me of that whole state share index that was the detriment to us in that old formula. Mm-hmm. So, you know, just pointing that out there's certainly, you know, risk, you know, with a potential new funding formula.
Okay. Any questions? All right. My report. First, I wanted to welcome Georgiana McKenzie, a Triad graduate who is attending a master's in teaching program at the University of Cumberland. And so she was required to attend a board meeting, and she chose our meeting. So you're getting a long meeting tonight. but thank you for being here. And, also, we had a community coffee this past weekend. I think Nan and Dick
yes.
did that.
Yes.
So, you want to just talk about that briefly?
Yep. Just a quick summary. Mm-hmm. We had one community member come and talk to us on the base concern is about availability of substitute teachers within the district, and then the pay of the mm-hmm. Substitute teachers, which mm-hmm. we're addressing later mm-hmm. this evening.
Yep, right, right.
And then we had some discussion about Tri Academy, which she didn't know about it, about that. Mm-hmm. So it was a great public relations mm-hmm. Discussion. Yeah. We actually touched on a whole bunch of subjects and shared at least three good things about our district.
Excellent. Excellent. Yes, I think. Did you pick that up from, that's right, we picked it up from the Capitol Conference. And I know we don't have one scheduled for December. I think we usually take a break in December. Donna had reached out to ask if we had any dates for next year. So I don't know if we want to.
I thought at the January 6th meeting, organizational
yes.
meeting, once we do all that, we
right.
can set the dates.
Okay,
for the
that
rest
sounds
of
like
year.
A good plan. Okay.
And I'd like to say, you know, we go and we sit, sometimes nobody comes.
Right.
This time we had one person come.
Right.
But when we do have people come, and I think especially this past week, you know, the conversation, she learned some things about the school district and that she didn't know, and seemed very positive about, you know, the new information that she got. So
mm-hmm.
I think the coffees are doing exactly what we hoped.
Yep, I agree.
Do.
I agree. And I noticed Fairbanks is holding a coffee tomorrow at
yeah.
Richwood Bank with their new superintendent.
Right.
It's kind of giving people an opportunity to come and
yeah.
meet him. So
now, one thing that this lady said, she works. She's at work right now, so she can't attend school board meetings.
Right.
So this was the second. I think she said it was the second time she'd come to a coffee.
Okay.
To be able to just talk with a board member about the school
right.
district. And so, you know, it's an opportunity. Somebody can't be here tonight.
Good. Right.
Well,
I'm sure you told her that she could always listen to our recorded meetings, right?
Yes.
Okay, good.
That's true.
Okay.
Yes, I did.
Good. Let's see, then, our Capitol Conference highlights, and I have, if everybody would like to just do a brief highlight maybe of one of the breakout sessions that you attended.
Sure.
And I know we all our goal is to send well, and if you're not prepared, that's fine.
I've got them all. I got them all right here.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. No. Please don't do them all.
Okay.
We sent out emails to the rest of the board because that is one of our goals. On our work plan is that when we do go to some of those events, we want to make sure that we share at least one highlight, something that we learned that we think is relevant to our district or our board.
Okay, I went to several really good sessions.
Yes.
One of them, I think, has to do, it's called Circle of Care, and it's about a school staff wellness, and it was presented by Upper Arlington Schools and Dr. Denise Snowden from OSU, who's in charge of their, I think their superintendent's program or their advanced administration program. They talk through the process that they're doing to help eliminate some of the stress and culture issues that they're experiencing in a high demand district.
Mm-hmm.
Every district's a little bit different on what's causing the stress. There's of course some common things, but then there's unique things to each district.
Mm-hmm.
And they stepped through a process where basically it comes down to listening to the staff about what they need to feel like they belong, that they're part of the organization, that they feel appreciated. And it's not really driven by things that you might think like salary, though everybody appreciates salary, but it's more about saying thank you and being appreciated for what you do, the extra time that you put in. So I thought it was a very good presentation. So
yeah.
I copied them all down, so I'm going to email you the whole
perfect.
The whole set.
All right. Thank you.
I went to one on essential policies for 2020, and the OSBA policy person, Kim Haycock, was there, and she talked about Attorney General opinion about sick leave banks for the classified staff that may impact some people. She brought up the issue of medical marijuana. Current state law does not change anything in schools. It's treated the same as any other drug. We can control that. She did mention that student use is not addressed by law, but there are some factors that involve that. State law says no person can possess medical marijuana unless they are a registered patient or a registered caregiver, and the registered caregiver requirements are patient-specific. And so it's not a free-for-all
right.
under state law, but it's certainly something that I'm certain there'll be some policy recommendations coming down, and we'll be having to deal with that. And she identified some hot topics, CBD oil,
mm-hmm.
and student discipline, developments in school safety, student supports and teacher evaluations, is all things that are going to be probably up for some review of some kind. I know we've got a number of policies that are in place. She did mention that our district does an excellent job. We have a policy committee that stays on top of recommended changes and so forth. She commended us for being on top of things. So that was my
Yeah, I went to the conference. I did not go to as many learning sessions as I usually do. I think I went to zero this time.
Okay, that's
but
a little
I did
less,
go to the,
little less.
I did go to the Central Executive Committee meeting. That's for the OSBA Central Region, and there was one kind of exciting thing from that. The incoming president of OSBA is from our region this year. His name is Lee Schreiner. I forget what district he's from.
Southwestern.
But also the incoming president of NSBA, National School Board Association, which draws from the whole country, is from our region. His name is Charlie Wilson.
Oh, yeah.
He's at Worthington. So Central Ohio is well represented in the School Board Association leadership.
Right.
I thought that was interesting.
Good. Okay. The one I wanted to highlight is I went to a session about Middletown schools, and it was about hashtag Mitty Rising. So kind of the background was they had built a new 2,400-seat auditorium, and they really wanted to showcase a lot of things going on in their district, and so they decided, you know what, we're going to see if we can fill our auditorium, if we can bring in our entire community. And so they had some students created a 6-minute video movie, and they sent out these little teasers several times throughout the community saying, oh, come to our movie premiere. And then they also tasked people in the district to get a certain number of people to commit to coming. They asked for RSVPs. They filled their auditorium. And one way they did it is they offered shuttle services from their different elementary buildings. And at each elementary building, they had little snacks for people. They had some highlights of things going on in that building. Then they sent them to the auditorium. They showed the video. And then at the high school, they also had a lot of areas where people could go and see what's going, some of the programs going on at the, in the school. And it was all student-led. So they showed us the video. But I think what struck me is I think when I think about everything that we've gone through in our district over the past 3, 4, 5 years, we've really been focused internally on, you know, this transition to personalized learning and our strategic plan. And I just felt like, wow, this is the perfect time for us to really try and engage our community more. You know, I think we try to, but I thought this was just a neat example of some things that we might want to consider since we have a lot of amazing students and staff and programs. So anyways, I thought that was a pretty neat one. Let's see, also this morning, Nan and I attended a Chamber of Commerce Business Impact Breakfast where we heard from Kenny McDonald, who's the head of what used to be called Columbus 2020, and now they're rebranding to One Columbus. And so he shared a lot of data growth over the past 10 years, which is amazing. As we all know, we've been growing so quickly here. Then he talked about a vision for the future. And the four main areas of focus were to sustain our momentum, develop and attract an adaptive workforce, enable innovation, and increase our global identity. And again, I kind of felt like it really kind of reflects everything that we're doing in our own district. And he also talked about the importance that our schools play in economic development because, you know, obviously we need to be working on developing this workforce. So he stressed the importance of never becoming complacent. And before the meeting, I was telling Diane, I don't think anybody could ever accuse our district of being complacent. So anyways, they also, at the end, they asked for ideas for presentations for next year. And it just made me think about our internships, partners, that maybe you know, maybe we might have some people who might want to do one of those business impact breakfasts. So they also, I think it was in another, I had a chamber board meeting after that, and they announced that the SAE competition, which is Society of Automotive Engineers, is going to take place in West Liberty this coming June, and there will be like over 200 college students in the design series competition where it's auto drive challenge. So it's a newly established 3-year autonomous vehicle competition headline sponsored by SAE International General Motors. It tasks students to develop and demonstrate a full autonomous driving passenger vehicle. So, again, from June 8th to 14th, we're going to have a bunch of college students right down the road from us, and I thought that's, you know, our district needs to be aware of that, because we have a lot of students who may be competing in a few years themselves. And then just reminders, Economic Development 411 is coming up on December 6th, and Eric Phillips, the chairman of the Chamber of Commerce, said that if anybody's interested, let him know, and he'll get us registered. And that's my long report. So, legislative report.
I sent a copy of the report, I think, to everybody's up here. There are two bills that were passed by the Ohio House that are now have gone to the Senate that I think we need to be aware of. The first bill is the Student Religious Freedom Bill, and there have been some articles in statewide papers and national papers and so forth about this particular bill. First of all, religious freedom for students is protected in schools. I used to tell my students that if they wanted to say a prayer before lunch, particularly if, and our food service is great, but I used to joke that, you know, sometimes the school lunch needs some help, and that a prayer prior to the meal would prove beneficial, or if they really hadn't studied and prepared for the math test that they were going to have to take, you know, all of that very well protected and so forth. Where this particular bill could become problematic is that language says that schools, teachers cannot prohibit a student from engaging in religious expression through their clothing, nor in the completion of homework, art, or other written or oral assignments. And it says that the assigned grades and scores will be calculated using ordinary academic standards. You can't mark them down, you can't mark them up, and so forth. So it's the way it's written. I think there's some good intentions, maybe, but I think there's a, you know, maybe there's some other intentions that may not be exactly right. But I see this as something that I think can be very problematic in the classroom. Some of the editorials have been written in the news and so forth point to science as an area where a religious faith-based answer to a science question could be problematic. So, and I provided both OSBA language and also language from the bill itself. The second.
So, Dick, before you go on, how far along is that bill in the process?
It passed in the House, and it received votes from every Republican in the House of Representatives. And it now has gone to the Senate, and so they will make a decision. And they can decide not to take it up, not to do anything with it, or they can decide to hold hearings and to take some sort of an action on it. So, I've sent sections of my legislative report to Dave Burke and told him that I will follow up with either a phone call or in-person message to sit and talk with him about this and try to see where he is and how things are moving forward. The other bill that was passed again with unanimous Republican support was House Bill 76 that would change the wording on election notices and ballot languages for property tax levies. And with this one, the issue is that the law says that you will put the fair market value of the house, you know, as language. And so I think when you are asked for the fair market value of your house, you think about the number of dollars it would take for you to sell your house. And that number is not what the auditor has on the books as the appraised value. And the taxable value is 35% of the appraised value. So you don't pay tax on the full value now. It's only 35% of the auditor's appraised value. So, from my perspective, and what I have shared, is I think that current law, while it may be confusing to some, at least uses numbers that have some specific basis for them. So if somebody wants to find out how a tax levy will impact them, they can call the auditor, they can do a calculation at home based on the numbers that are at the auditor's site. But if this new requirement says, you know, the market, fair market value, people are likely to choose a different number, which would give them a different tax amount. So, anyway. But those are the two. There are ongoing issues. I've provided new bills that were introduced. Lastly, at Ohio OSB, Capital Conference, had an opportunity to talk with Representative Don Jones and Representative Lisa Sobecki. Both of them, Representative Jones is chair of the House Education Committee. He is the new chair. And Representative Sobecki is on the Education Committee. The two of them, plus our representative, Tracy Richardson, make up the three House representatives on the State Report Card Committee. I invited both Representative Jones and Representative Sobecki to come and visit, and we're working with Representative Sobecki's office to try to find a time in January that might work. I'm going to reach back out to Representative Jones and see if we can get him to come and visit the district. Because I think we've got a great story to tell. And I think that our district is doing exactly what they talk about in Columbus as being the way that education ought to be in Ohio.
All right. Thank you very much. And
so we don't have a meeting until December, but I'm going to throw in a little bit to be back on what Dick was saying at the OSB conference.
Right.
I was at training today down in Columbus for the special dockets. And so this vaping is really, really becoming a dangerous issue. I saw pictures today of a 17-year-old laying in a hospital bed. One was on, another kid was on life equipment. And so they're doing a lot of these oils. It's what they have no idea what they're smoking when they put this stuff in. So there's a lot of oils that are clinging actually onto the lung itself, not being able to let the lung function and stuff. So I think that this is going to be one of our big issues, is really teaching these kids and getting some informative stuff in their hands about this vaping, because it's a really
scary.
Bad trend.
Okay, thank you. All right. Next on the agenda, I would accept a motion to approve our draft minutes of our October 17th regular meeting and our November 7th special meeting.
So moved.
Moved by Ms. Powers.
Second.
Second by Ms. Savage. Any comments or questions? Roll call, please.
Ms. Powers?
Yes.
Ms. Savage?
Yes.
Mr. Luke?
Yes.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Ms. Devine?
Yes. Motion carries. Next. I need a motion to approve Richard Smith to attend the Washington, D.C. 2020 NSBA Advocacy Institute.
So moved.
Motion by Mr. Luke.
Second.
Second by Ms. Savage. Any questions or comments?
I would say last year particularly, I think we were able to move the needle on special education. And what I do is I take stories from our district on what we're doing and how the federal policies and support impact our district, and try to explain how they could be better.
Do you know what is their what's their focus this year? Do you know
their focus? There are several areas that they're looking at, but they're the same areas that were on our agenda last year.
Okay,
and that's special education, technology, teacher education, the census.
Okay,
there's a number of things, but our focus. I'm partnered with a gentleman from a board member from Elida,
and
we've already been in contact, and so our focus is really going to be more on the special education aspects of things, because we think that has more impact both of our districts.
Okay, great. All right, roll call.
Mr. Luke?
Yes.
Ms. Savage?
Yes.
Ms. Powers?
Yes.
Mr. Smith?
I'm going to abstain.
Ms. Devine?
Yes. Motion carries.
You're not going to vote to send yourself to Washington?
I think you could. Yeah, you could have voted, but that's all right.
I don't know whether that'd be a...
Yeah, that's quite all right.
I thought if I don't vote, then there's no conflict.
Okay.
Next, all public officials are that conscientious.
Yeah. Next on our agenda, accept a motion to approve the treasure items as listed.
So moved.
Motion by Mr. Smith.
Second.
Second by Ms. Powers.
A couple of the highlights, increasing appropriations. The biggest ones on there are just due to our federal grants carryover mm-hmm. from money from last year has been allocated now to this year. Mm-hmm. You'll note on the cash flow that there aren't any variances. That's because it's been updated based on our new five-year forecast. So the projections have been built in. The Hope Center lease renewal is on there for another one-year renewal. Okay. No changes in any terms. We've talked in the past about the student success and wellness plan. That is now on our agenda for approval. That just part of the compliance of being able to spend that money, that plan has to be approved. And then also just thank some of our generous donors on there. There's multiple donations listed.
The student wellness, success and wellness fund, those are targeted state dollars. Is that the way to explain that?
Yeah, I mean, to me, in essence, in lieu of giving a increase in your basic state aid, they said, we'll come over here with a little more strings attached, and mm-hmm. here's an increase. So it's just kind of like you said, it's kind of targeting where they wanted that additional money to be spent.
Is that Hope Center lease, is that renegotiated every year, or is it sort of automatic?
We always do a one-year lease. That's just what we've done. So we've renewed it each year, every year.
At the same level?
Not always.
Okay.
But this year it was the same.
And I just, going back to that Student Wellness and Success Fund, I mean, just kind of looking through there and thinking about the Capital Conference and some of the things that they were focusing on there, you know, additional trauma responsive care training for our staff, which I think is so important. And then having this school navigator position, I really appreciate the fact that this cost is shared between our district and then Mental Health Board and Mary Haven. So, you know, again, really partnering with a lot of different resources to try and best support our students. So I really appreciate that. The signs of suicide, sustainability. So a lot of good uses, I think, for those funds. Appreciate that. And a great five-year forecast, I have to say. Not too many five-year forecasts that show a positive balance every five, every single year when we haven't had new money. So I think that's worth noting. Any other questions or comments? Then roll call, please.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Ms. Powers?
Yes.
Mr. Luke?
Yes.
Ms. Savage?
Yes.
Ms. Devine?
Yes. Motion carries. Next item, I'd accept a motion to approve Lauren Devine as the MHS Basketball Assistant Girls Ninth Grade Coach.
So moved.
Motion by Mr. Smith?
Second.
Second by Ms. Savage. Roll call.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Ms. Savage?
Yes.
Mr. Luke?
Yes.
Ms. Powers?
Yes.
Ms. Devine?
Abstain. Motion carries. Next on the agenda, I'd accept a motion to approve the superintendent action items.
So moved.
Moved by Ms. Powers.
Second.
Seconded by Ms. Savage.
We have several HR items on there. I wanted to highlight Deb Schnapp's retirement will be effective next December, but she was able to notify us this year, so okay. Appreciate her service to kids. Several supplementals. You have approval of policies that were on last month. We also have a bus bid for 4 buses, which is aligned to our PI forecast and for next year, or for this year. Library board members are on there. It appears that someone's going to fill a term and mm-hmm. then go into a, I think it was a 7-year term after that. Mm-hmm. We also have rental fees on there, overnight trip to D.C. for our Japanese students. They did that last year, if you remember, mm-hmm. as well, and also increasing our substitute rate. You know, there's a sub shortage in Central Ohio, period.
Right.
And it's also a workforce issue. When we talk as superintendents, really everyone's having a difficult time finding people who want to work Mondays and Fridays in general. And so we did bump up to $100 from $90. That puts us about a middle of the range. We would project that to, based on, for example, last year, increase our costs about
a little under $50,000.
Yeah. So we'll see if that makes a difference. I don't think it'll be widespread because it's more of a supply issue.
Right.
But we're going to try to continue to do everything we can to get people to come. And if anyone has the credentials to become a substitute teacher or wants to work, call in at FOT.
Okay.
So one of the policy issues that's been getting some public attention is the alcohol at the stadium for non-school events, and I wanted to clarify or confirm that that's not
nope.
That's not being voted on tonight.
I would like to clarify that that policy also was not tabled. For some reason, it's been quoted more than once in local media that has been a tabled issue. It's been completely withdrawn. A tabled issue would insinuate we'd only have to bring it back for another vote. If we brought that forward, it would require 2 votes, and that's not the direction we took a couple months ago.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Everything in there was in there last time. We made a few revisions and updates. Show choir is on for approval for kids to get PE credit, which is aligned with policy legislation that allows us to do that. Would be one example.
Right. And the one and that minor change was just to make to just identify that it was the singer dancers.
Performers.
Who get the performers, who get that exemption. I actually saw Tracy Richardson this morning, and so just kind of reminded her that we were going to have that on for tonight, and I told her about that change, and she says, oh, yeah, because that was always the intent, that it would just be the performers.
That was not necessarily the advice that we were given, but that is the way our policy committee wanted that to be.
What about the drummer?
The drummer?
Shouldn't the drummer get...
No, because Tracy said if you went back and looked at the requirements for PE credit, you know, she goes, I think it'd be pretty clear that the performers meet those requirements. So, and I'm sure you could argue in certain instances,
kidding,
but
It is a good workout.
Oh, it is. Well, you're right. Yeah. Okay, any other questions? I guess we always appreciate Nisa being here to represent her library. Make sure that we approve her new library board member.
So,
she's gotten quite a bit of her book read during this meeting, I think. No.
There are 3 policies that deal with tobacco use.
Right.
And it's language that extends to vaping. That was changes in state law and so forth. And there's a community interest in this, and they've been a recommendation, which we have in front of us to the board. So, primarily driven by state law, but some of the things in the policy more reflect our district.
Right.
So it's, I don't want people to think we just blindly take something that
right.
somebody sends us
right.
and enact it. There's a local review. It takes a lot of time, a lot of dedication for the people that really spend the time on it. And so I feel good about our process.
Mm-hmm. I would have to agree. Okay, any other questions or comments? Roll call.
Ms. Powers?
Yes.
Ms. Savage?
Yes.
Mr. Luke?
Yes.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Ms. Devine?
Yes. Motion carries. And now we are to comments and questions. Mr. Smith?
The Capitol Conference was absolutely great. I got a lot out of it. Went to a session on Ohio High School Athletic Association and their tournaments and so forth, and heard the financial woes of that organization, which does an amazing job. And I'm glad that Diane mentioned tonight that we don't get wealthy, but that it does open up opportunities for booster clubs and other organizations to raise money. I attended two breakfasts at Creekview with grandsons, the fifth grade and then later the sixth grade, and that was really a neat event. I was absolutely blown away with all the different activities that took place within our district. Recognizing veterans.
Mm-hmm.
I was getting ready to come, and this is my father's World War II ribbon from the Pacific that I'm wearing tonight to remember and honor him. But I know that our students throughout the district did just an amazing job in recognizing veterans and in learning about veterans.
Yes.
And the sacrifices of those people, plus also their families and so forth. The other night I had an opportunity to join some people from Triad. They're looking at a new athletic facility, and they came and toured our facility, and hopefully they will be able to break ground and move forward on that in the near future. But it was good to have an opportunity to show Impact Stadium, and they were very impressed with what they saw, and that was nice also to get some kind of confirmation that things turned out well. So I know we still have some finish up to do, but again, weather.
Yeah, right.
Been an issue. So. And thanks for hosting. This
mm-hmm.
is
You're welcome.
Always a great stop in our tour of the building. So thanks,
Diane.
That's it.
Thank you for hosting. Thank you for the cookies and refreshments. It's always wonderful to come here and get that. I want to really compliment you on the kindness project and mm-hmm. the story time project. I think those are wonderful initiatives for the school to do. Great feedback on the trauma-informed classrooms. We had a guest speaker come in and speak at several of the schools.
Mm-hmm.
I heard from several different people at several different school districts how wonderful she was, and the teachers were all very engaged by that. And the signs of suicide discussion also. It's thank you mm-hmm. for putting that on and bringing the conversation to the people.
Mm-hmm.
So many good things going on in our district, it's hard to just pick a few to hit on, but Troy Academy is doing an alternative peer group program, which I think is excellent. It's kids supporting kids, and it's helping them transition from a school environment that's very supportive, that they become peer supportive, and I think that's a wonderful program. Funsold, we have the DC trip, which is mm-hmm. always a wonderful experience for our kids. Career Day, they had an incredible number of veterans that came and attended the Funsold event. And then November 25th and 26th, the 8th graders are going to tour both the high schools to make their decision for their selection for freshman year. I want to give positive feedback from every school about the presence of the SRO officers. Mm-hmm. I've heard lots of direct feedback from everyone that direct contact with students and staff is invaluable. And I wanted to shout out to the Raymond fundraiser, since they delivered my apple pie to my house right before the meeting. And I think my husband's at home eating it right now. So that was a great fundraiser.
Thank you. And it was a great presentation. I still really am interested in the sign language. I've always wanted to learn that, so I thought, how could I get out of work? I mean, I'm a judge, I'll fall for it, but I thought maybe. And just want to say I'm very proud and humbled to be able to serve on this board with all of you for another 4 years. Mm-hmm. And just want to thank all of the community for the support that they give us as well.
That's it.
I live in Marysville, but I work in Upper Arlington, and one of my coworkers at a meeting this week said that she had been at our new stadium for an event and that it was beautiful. And that made me feel good, and I wanted to pass it on to you because, you know, we approved this project because the kids need the new facilities for the sports and the music, but we also knew this is the primary way that other school districts have contact with us. This is how I see other schools, is when I go to my kids' sporting events, and this is how they see us. So people from the whole region are coming to Marysville and seeing that we take care of our schools and we take care of our kids. I think mm-hmm. that's great. I wanted to remind everybody to visit, everybody on the board, to visit some winter sports. That was one of our goals this year, is to get to some new sports that we haven't frequented before. Mm-hmm. I like the presentation on the social-emotional. I think that's really key, and it's going to bear fruit. Not only will these kids feel connected and feel a better sense of well-being, it's going to be skills they'll carry into life, mm-hmm. and it will improve their academic performance. I'm convinced of that. It's mm-hmm. not something that we talked about much when I got my education degree 20 years ago. But I'm glad we're focusing on it. I think it's key. It's a key part of education. I wanted to mention the vaping again. This is my last comment tonight. I have three teens in my household. Okay, one of them's at Tri, and one's at the early college high school. And vaping is a huge thing. It's very widespread. I know from this personal experience with my family that it's highly addictive. It's also a new technology, and we don't know very much about it. We don't know much about the safety of it. We're learning things. There was just a study a week or two from the CDC that associated these deaths with an oil, a particular mm-hmm. oil. So that's new information. Mm-hmm. So here's a habit that's all of a sudden sprung on our kids in a few years that's very widespread and highly addictive, and we know very little about it. So as a district, mm-hmm. it's not enough just to fold it into the tobacco policy. We have to be alert and aware and proactive, because we don't know where this is leading. So I'm glad that we're talking about it and paying attention to it. Mm-hmm. I did want to mention that at the band contest where my daughter marched and they all got ones, both principals were there, mm-hmm. Kenny and Tom, and that meant a lot to those kids in the marching band. I don't think they had to be there, but they were, so mm-hmm. I thought that was great. Mm-hmm.
And I, so just to add on to that, I also think it's neat that the quarterback club is, like, the band and the quarterback club have such a great relationship now. So on Facebook, they're congratulating the band and vice versa, you know, and it's great to see. Sorry.
I just piggyback real quick on Dick and Diane talked about the playoffs that we were able to host, and you know, we talked about in our original plans for the stadium not only the impact on our students and the community, but also that, you know, that would also bring additional bodies into the district, and the potential it could have on area businesses. And I had heard of at least one local restaurant that specifically targeted an advertising, you know, Dublin Jerome. Residents to come visit our restaurant if you're going to be coming to the playoff game. So just kind of our plans coming to fruition.
Right.
Nothing else. Just everyone have a good Thanksgiving. We have a lot to be thankful for in this district.
Sure do.
And congratulations to you both. And look forward to continue to work with all of you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I'm grateful as well to continue serving with all of the rest of my board, my partner in crime there, and the rest of you. It's a joy. Thank you so much, Lynette. Great presentation. Appreciate. I know the craziness of planning that, and just all of the craziness in the building when the kids are running around to the different rooms. But it's a lot of good work. Let's see. I also want to comment that the choir is holding a fundraiser this Saturday, the cabaret. If you've not attended that ever, it's really a nice event. You have a lot of people, a lot of students performing, and I think the show choir probably does something too. But the doors open at 6 p.m. They have a lot of raffle items. And as far as the building notes, I mean, I'm with you, Dick. I mean, I read through all those notes. There's so many great things in there. But the Veterans Day celebrations are what it just gets to me. But I mean, it's amazing. And so I just really appreciate what our staff does to make sure that our students are aware and grateful for, you know, all of those people who served our country and defend our liberties. So
yeah.
It was amazing. Yep.
Yeah, up in Raymond, they raised money last spring to send a veteran on an honor flight.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then they hosted him this fall, and he presented the school
with
a flag and so forth. So
I know.
You know, those are the kinds of things. English is great, so is math, but kids don't remember that stuff. They remember the special events. They remember the moments where something really neat happened in
right.
their lives. You know, and
right.
When they have an opportunity to see something very meaningful to somebody else happen, that's one of those moments that tends to stick with them.
No, and it's a great way that we're engaging with our community too, you know, and showing them how much we appreciate them, and we're all in this together. So with that, let's see, a couple quick things here. City events. There's the Pumpkin Dash is on Thursday, Halloween. The Christmas Parade is December 1st at 2 p.m. Christmas Walk is December 2nd from 5 to 8, and the tree will be lit at 6 p.m. And the Iceless Skating Rink will open up on December 14th through January 5th. And they're planning a New Year's Eve celebration with a ball drop uptown. So stay tuned for information on that. So happy Thanksgiving to everybody, and how about a motion to adjourn? Motion by Mr. Smith. Second by Ms. Powers. Roll call.
Mr. Smith.
Yes.
Ms. Powers.
Yes.
Mr. Luke.
Yes.
Ms. Savage.
Yes.
Ms. Devine.
Yes. Motion carries. We're adjourned at 9:11.